गोपी जना वल्लभ गोपी जना वल्लभ यमुना तीरावन चारी यमुना तीरावन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोदानन्दन व्रज जन रञ्जन यमुना तीरावनचारी यमुना तीरावनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी
परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत श्री श्रीमद डिवाइन ग्रेसेसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरंग। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेष भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिकी। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद्भागवतम कैंटो 8 चैप्टर 3 गजेंद्रस प्रेयर्स ऑफ सरेंडर टेक्स्ट 15। This verse is very poetic. There's in English called alliteration. You'll find that every line ends with a beautiful ya. That's very nice. Namo namaste khila karanaya. निष्कारणायाद्भुतकारणाय सर्वागमाम्नाय महार्णवाय नमो भवर्गाय परायणाय नमो नमस्ते खिल कारणाय निष्कारणायाद्भुतकारणाय सर्वागमाम्नाय महार्णवाय नमो पवर्गाय परायणाय नमो नमस्ते खिल कारणाय निष्कारणायाद्भुतकारणाय सर्वागमाम्नाय महार्णवाय नमो पवर्गाय परायणाय निष्कारणायाद्भुतकारणाय सर्वागमाम्नाय महार्णवाय नमो नमस्ते किल कारणाय निष्कारणायाद्भुतकारणाय सर्वागमनाय महार्णवाय नमो पवर्गाय महायनाय नमो नमस्ते अखिल कारणाय निष्कारणायाद्भुतकारणाय सर्वागमनाय महार्णवाय नमो पवर्गाय महायनाय Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances. Namaha. Again, I offer my respectful obeisances. Te unto you, Akhila Karanaya, unto the supreme cause of everything. Nishkaranaya, unto you who are causeless. Adbhutakaranaya, the wonderful cause of everything. Sarva, all. Agama Amnaya, unto the source of the parampara system of all Vedic knowledge. Maha Arnavaya, the great ocean of knowledge. Or the great ocean wherein all rivers of knowledge merge. Namaha, I offer my obeisances. Apavargaya, unto you who can give deliverance or liberation. Paraayanaya, the shelter of all transcendentalists. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. My Lord, You are the cause of all causes, but you yourself have no cause. Therefore, you are the wonderful cause of everything. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, who are the shelter of the Vedic knowledge contained in the Shastras like the Pancharatras and Vedanta Sutra, which are your representations, and who are the source of the Parampara system. Because it is you who can give liberation, you are the only shelter for all transcendentalists. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is described herein as the wonderful cause. He is wonderful in the sense that although there may be unlimited emanations from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Janmadhyasya Yataha, he always remains complete. Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishvate. In our experience in the material world, if we have a bank balance of $1 million, as we withdraw money from the bank, the balance gradually diminishes until it becomes nil. However, the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, is so complete that although innumerable personalities of Godhead expand from him, he remains the same Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Avashishyate. Therefore, he is the wonderful cause. Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. Ishvara Paramakrishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadiradir Govinda Sarvakarana Karanam. Krishna, who is known as Govinda, is the Supreme Controller. He has an eternal, blissful, spiritual body. He is the origin of all. He has no other origin, for he is the prime cause of all causes. Brahma Samhita. Even in this material world, we can understand that the sun has existed for millions of years and has given off heat and light since its creation. Yet the sun still retains its power and never changes. What then is to be said of the supreme cause, Param Brahma, Krishna? Everything emanates from him perpetually, yet he maintains his original form, Satchidananda Vigraha. Krishna personally says in Bhagavad Gita, Matta Sarvam Pravartate, everything emanates from me. Everything emanates from Krishna eternally, yet he is the same Krishna and does not change. Therefore, he is the shelter of all transcendentalists who are eager to get free from material bondage. Everyone must take shelter of Krishna. It is therefore advised, Akamah Sarva Kamova Moksha Kama Udaradhi Tivrena Bhakti Yogena Yajeta Purusham Param. Whether one desires everything or nothing, or desires to merge into the existence of the Lord, he is intelligent only if he worships Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by rendering transcendental loving service. Param Brahma, the Supreme Lord, and Param Dhamma, the Supreme Repose, is Krishna. Therefore, anyone who desires anything, whether he be a Karmi, a Jnani, or a Yogi, should try to perceive the Supreme Personality of Godhead very seriously, and all of his desires will be fulfilled. The Lord says, Ye yatha mam prapadyante tam stathaiva bhajamyaham. As the living entities surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Even the Karmi who wants everything for his enjoyment can get it from Krishna. For Krishna, supplying what he wants is not at all difficult. Actually, however, one should worship Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for the sake of getting liberation. Vedaścha sarvair ahameva vedyah. By studying the Vedic literature, one should understand Krishna. As confirmed here, Sarvagamanamnaya Maharanavaya. He is the ocean of all Vedic knowledge. He is the ocean and all Vedic knowledge flows towards him. Therefore, intelligent transcendentalists take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sarvadharvan Parityajya Maham Ekam Sharanam Vraja. This is the ultimate goal. Omagyana Tamirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha श्री चैतन्य मनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदांतिकं वांछा कल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। So the verse begins with Namo Namaste. Every morning when we sing Tulsi prayer, sing with Namo Namo Tulasi. So the reason there is twice Namaha is because it's a way of expressing the greatness of that personality and simultaneously the smallness of ourselves. That someone very great, very awesome is who we are approaching. So he says, Namo Namaste. I offer my obeisances again and again. So in Vedic understanding, offering of obeisances once is not enough. It has to be done again and again. So we see this sort of phraseology, Namo Namaste, Namo Namo, again and again. Because the personality is very great. So Gajendra, who is in this serious difficulty, he's calling out to the Supreme Lord, and he says, Namo Namaste. And then he uses very beautiful phrases. Now by this time, by the time he is offering prayers, he has gone beyond the immediate circumstance that he is under. So when, if we were to see it from our perspective, when we are going through a difficulty, something is bothering us, whether it's lack of money, lack of friendship, or some physical condition, some mental condition, something is really drastically bothering us. Then even if we come in front of Krishna or the spiritual master, the problem that we have is right in front of our mind. We call it being absorbed in the problem. So all we talk about to the deities or to the spiritual master or to other devotees is only our problems. That is all that we are absorbed with. So that immediate issue is so big that our mind cannot move from that difficulty. Gajendra, his difficulty is that he's been fighting for 1,000 years. It's not that he's fighting for 1 hour, 2 hour, 1 day, 1 week, for 1,000 years. And naturally his leg must be bleeding and hurting like anything, right? When we get a little paper cut, even that is bothersome. What to speak of anyone working in the kitchen, cut their finger. Then that finger becomes useless. And our absorption is on that finger quite a bit. Because suddenly we realize that without that finger, let's say it's the index finger, you can't button your shirt, you can't hold something, and so you're so aware of that one finger not functioning. But this guy has been fighting with the crocodile for 1,000 years. In his prayers, though we see that he has transcended that situation. And how do we know? Because he's able to offer such fantastic prayers. That means he has transcended that immediate situation and has come to that stage of his prayer or vandanam, his connection with Krishna. So that immediate circumstance, the crocodile had, chomping on his leg, is not the absorption anymore. So he is able to offer such wonderful prayer that is not only philosophically so correct, but so poetic. Namo Namaste, and he says, Akhila Karanaya. When you use the word Akhila, it means the all-encompassing, the complete. It says, Akhila Karanaya. So this whole world is, and that's what Prabhupada is explaining in the purport, this whole world is only characterized by cause and effect. There's cause and there's effect. There's cause and effect. Everything that, meaning it's a relative world. Nothing is standing on its own. It is all dependent on a previous cause. This is called daytime because previously there was nighttime. And it's called nighttime because previously it was daytime. It's one dependent on the other. If the sun was always there in the sky, would there be a nighttime? We wouldn't know what nighttime meant. We are awake now because we were asleep previously. I can't say we are awake now, but at least you know what I mean. Bhagavatam class is that that phase where you are awake and asleep at the same time. Is that cross of breath. But anyway, we are awake now because we were asleep previously. Because we slept, there is a cause, there is an effect of it that we are awake. Or whatever, we are hungry now because we were not hungry previously. Or we were not hungry now because we've eaten. Everything is cause and effect, cause and effect. Just the transformation of the body. You take anything in this world, it's all cause and effect. And that cause and effect is actually brought forth by the three modes of nature. Therefore, we see that for each person, the cause and effect is different. For the same person, the same cause can have a different effect according to time and according to modes of nature. That is why when we do the same thing, we get different results, which are in the modes of nature. And all of these modes of nature are being allowed to flow. The modes are flowing because of Krishna's supervision. Krishna says, I am the one, under my supervision, everything is going on. Maya drashtena, by my vision, everything is going on. So Krishna is the ultimate cause of everything that we see around us, the phenomenon. And that phenomenon around us is so, he uses the word adbhuta. So adbhuta has multiple connotations. One is that the creation itself is adbhut, is wonderful. When we see wonderful sunrise or sunset or the northern skylights, it's called aurora borealis. All this thing. Bhakti Marg Maharaj was explaining of the sky is full of these green and pink colors. Or the phenomena of monsoon. Or if you take a little bud of, and the, it blooms into a flower. If you look at some of the time-lapse videos, you see how everything's so nicely packed and then it unravels itself. Just a flower. Or how the embryo grows within the womb. And then birth happens. Just pick anything. It is so fascinating. So we hear, right? In Los Angeles, when Srila Prabhupada was with his disciples, someone looked at the sunrise, I think, or the sunset. Said, Srila Prabhupada, how beautiful the sky looks, like a wonderful painting. And Prabhupada's response was, if the painting is so wonderful, imagine how wonderful the painter must be. And the flowers have fragrance, colors, the range of colors that are possible, etc., etc. This, everything is wonderful. So that's Adbhuta Karana. And if we see how things are caused so wonderfully, then we have to wonder, like, wow, how is electricity possible? How's thermodynamics, thermal heat, hydroelectricity? There's all sorts of phenomena, like, very wonderful how we have all these things. And then Krishna himself is so wonderful that so many personalities of Godhead expand from him. Balaram, Narsingadev, Varaha, Vamana. But then he can be like a little boy crawling in Yashoda Devi's home, feeling hungry, breaking a pot, distributing the butter to monkeys. It's a little, whoa, the same personality? Yes, sir, very safe. We were discussing in our Bhagavad Gita class yesterday that in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 9th and 10th cantos, there are two personalities that are spoken about. Lord Rama and Lord Krishna. When Narsingadev appeared from the pillar, there was no doubt whether he was God or not. Even Hiranyakashipu, who didn't believe in God, was for a few moments taken by surprise. Wow, who's that? This must be someone very powerful. And no one can have any doubt whether that was God or not. Narsingadev. Or where Varahadev appeared. The size of Varahadev was so big that sages on the earthly planet and sages on Tapaloka, they saw the same form simultaneously. It was so big. And when he shook his body from that causal waters, drops of that water fell on different planetary systems. But when Krishna and Rama, they walk around, Lord Ram walking in the forest with matted hair, looking for his wife. It's a very mundane thing, looking for his wife. It's like, come on, what is this? Or crying because I don't know where Sita is. Or asking the monkeys and bears, can you help me please? And Krishna, little boy, walking around, playing with his friends, eating butter and fruit and walking around the banks of Yamuna. And just previously, when Narasimha and Varaha, they all appeared, Lord Brahma, Indra, they were all standing like this. Oh, this is personality of Godhead. But as soon as he appeared as Krishna, they wonder, can we trick him and see if he's really God? So Adbhuta is so wonderful that although he's the supreme personality of Godhead, his form is a human-like, is very... it can confuse. That's the wonderment. That how, and this is Kunti Devi's expression. You're inside and outside of everything. You're the supreme absolute truth, the cause of everything. Yet, you walk around as if you're one of us. Like an actor with fantastic makeup and lines are so good. Nato natya dhro yatha. You cannot be recognized. Your makeup and your behavior is so like, oh, it's our cousin, my nephew. You behave as if you're one of us. And the interesting thing to make it even more wonderful is, while he's this little baby crawling in Yashoda Mai's backyard, he's still the creator of everything. He's the supreme soul that is conscious and aware of every living entity's movements within the universe and creation. Simultaneously, both are there. And that is very bewildering. That is the Adbhuta Karanaya. Another way of understanding Adbhuta Karanaya is the varieties of ways in which Krishna arranges things for his devotees. again and again and again. And for each devotee, it's such a fascinating way. For some, it looks like a curse, but it's actually a blessing. For some, it looks like a blessing, it's actually a curse. But even within that curse, when it comes to his own devotees, he's helping them. Very fascinating. And it's Adbhuta Karana is Gajendra's curse to be an elephant. So in his own case, it is very Adbhuta. Because previously as King Indradumna, and it's not the same Indradumna who was a devotee of Lord Jagannath, not same Indra, it's another Indradumna. He was cursed by Agastya Muni. You know for what he was cursed? Because he was not paying attention to his class. Agastya Muni was speaking and Indradumna Maharaj's attention drifted for a little moment. So Agastya Muni said, "You're not paying attention, you're dull, you should become an elephant, it is a dull animal." So when Agastya Muni comes, we should serve him, but hearing class will be difficult. Anyway, so he cursed him to become a dull animal. Thank God our spiritual masters don't curse us for our inattentive hearing. And I was like, whoa, by this time we'd be roaming in many species of life. So he was cursed to be an elephant immediately. Suddenly big legs, big trunk, tusks, big ears, small eyes, the whole form changed. But the acharyas explain that within Agastya Muni's curse is a blessing. And the blessing is that Indradumna on his own would have never met the Lord face to face so quickly. It was not possible at all. But by Agastya Muni's curse, it's made things so fast for him that in that life as Gajendra, he was able to see the Lord. Not only see the Lord, but had Sarupya Mukti. We'll hear at the end of the pastime. He got the same form. So that curse actually sped things up for him. This is Adbhuta. Or Narada Muni walking and cursing Nalukuvara and Manigriva. Normally Krishna would not care for, you know, every tree that's there in Yashoda Mai's backyard. He says wonderful trees, glorified them. But these two trees, he went after them and broke them, right? That's because Narada Muni said, "Oh, Krishna will come to relieve you." This is the Adbhuta, how things Krishna arranges to speed up or to enhance their devotional service. It's Adbhuta. For the external eye, we see in terms of good and bad and dualities. But Krishna doesn't care for those things. So for some people, it speeds up. For some, it's all these wonderful ways of arranging things. Like when we hear about Prabhupada's success, you can not but wonder, wow, if that was so easy, every 70-year-old should be able to do it. But by the time people reach 70, I mean, they're rendered physically almost useless. It's not so possible. Nowadays, even by 45, 50, it's like, I'm tired. I can't, you know, just like that. This morning was very tough for me. But at 70, starting off a career at 70, wow, that's something. Because Adbhuta Karanaya, Krishna is very fascinating in the way he can manifest things. So this Adbhuta Karana has many meanings like that. And then he says, although you are Adbhuta Karanaya, you are Nishkaranaya. You have no own source of yours. Anything that is a cause, or that anything that is caused, is under the jurisdiction of the Creator. For example, we have been caused by our parents, and unless our parents nourished us, we wouldn't be alive here. Or anything we create is within our jurisdiction. Sometimes they go out of our control. Let's say you send a rocket into space, or flying a plane, or driving a car, or shooting a missile. Is it true that every missile we sent out meets its target? No, it goes out of control. Why is it that if I've created the missile, it goes out of my control, although every creator should be able to control it? The problem is that the so-called creators, like us, we are not creating anything. We're just learning how to utilize the created laws that exist, laws of physics, laws of thermodynamics, laws of movement, Newton. We call it Newton's law, but actually it's Krishna's law. But these are laws that exist. We only learn to use them. But we don't know exactly how those laws operate in all circumstances. So although we create something, what we created is not in our control. But for Krishna, because he is the absolute creator, all of material laws are subservient to him. So he can change it. For example, one of the laws is, if we go out in the rain, we will get wet. And if it is extremely cold, you know, our lungs will freeze, etc. We get pneumonia. If it's extremely hot, our skin will get tanned severely, or have a sunburn, whatever. I'm using simple example. But when Indra attacked Vrindavan for 7 days, it's not an ordinary pastime. There is no demon who fought with Krishna so long. I think Varaha and Hiranyaksha fought. And Jambavan and Krishna fought for 27 days. But this kind of fighting that Indra did with the residents of Vrindavan for 7 consecutive days, none of the Vrajvasis, the cows, became wet. And the rain was not a drop of rain. It was falling like columns or pillars. So much water at the same time. Not one of the residents became wet. There was no flooding in Vrindavan. They forgot hunger, they forgot thirst. Krishna can change the laws. He can have an artificial sunset. When Jayadratha was supposed to be killed, and that sunset, this is my favorite pastime, so Arjuna had promised, by sunset tomorrow, I will kill Jayadratha, otherwise I will enter fire and kill myself. And the one who was most worried about this vow was Krishna, more than Jayadratha. Because Krishna said, how can you make such a vow? Arjuna, this is not easy. I don't know. I said it. Okay, Krishna has to fulfill it now, because everything his devotee says. So Krishna made an artificial sunset. And we thought, oh, sunset. The other day we were discussing, Krishna even made an artificial Amavasya to trick Duryodhan. Everyone thought, oh, full moon, new moon day. Artificial sunset, new moon day. He can do anything. The laws don't work. In the 11th canto, there's this fascinating pastime, Markandeya Rishi. He's a very devout devotee of Lord Shiva. And he is one of the Chiranjeevis who lives very long. So he had lived for almost 3 or 4 or 5 Manvantaras. So many Manus came and went, but he's still nice and young. He's still alive. So when he meets the Lord, he says, do you have anything you want to, any desires, any boons you want? And Markandeya Rishi, after all these years and millions of years of tapasya, his desire is, can I see how your Maya Shakti works? Wow. I mean, we shouldn't ask Krishna how your Maya Shakti works, because we know it quite well, I guess. But he says, can I see how your Maya Shakti works? And immediately, around him was this causal dissolution, this massive tidal waves of water. Because the universal dissolution, the whole universe is washed away. And he saw this, wow. And on that big, massive waves, one banyan leaf, it's called Vatapatra. On that banyan leaf was a small baby, an infant Krishna, who was with his toe in his mouth, making baby sounds, looking at Markandeya Rishi. Markandeya Rishi was like, totally, wow, never seen anything like that. And the next moment, while that little baby is, you know, twinkling his eyes, fluttering his eyelids like this, took that entire water, including Markandeya Rishi, into him. The entire creation was absorbed into that tiny baby. And the next moment, everything was as it was normal. Markandeya Rishi said, I've never seen anything like this. Because Krishna is outside of everything, everything is within him, everything is outside of him. Simultaneously, it was such a fascinating, wow, how does this all happen? Even for Markandeya Rishi, with such control of senses, it's bewildering. That's the adbhuta feature. But Nishkaranaya, he has no source of himself. And then he says, Sarva Agama Amnaya. Agama means Vedic knowledge. What's the third verse of the Bhagavatam? Nigama Kalpataro Galitam Phalam. Nigama. So Nigama or Agama mean the same. The word Gamana means to come and go. So this material world is a place of coming and going from one birth to another. So Agama or Nigama means that which has no coming and going, or by which no more coming and going. It means Vedic knowledge, by transcendental knowledge. One is relieved of the birth and death. He says, Agama Amnaya. Amnaya means that process by which something is given from one generation to another generation. We get culture, family values, tradition, knowledge, all coming from one generation to another generation. That is the process by which there is a sense of continuity, and there is a sense by which future generations have a sense of identity. On the seminal side of things, things break down. Cultures break down because people migrate, or wars happen, certain family lines are completely finished. Yet there is the disciplic succession that still continues. Sometimes disciplic successions are broken. Correct? Krishna says in the fourth chapter, this line has been broken and I'm re-establishing it again. Without such lines, there's no progress for human society. There's no way of maintaining a sense of continuity. So it's very important that there are disciplic successions. So you're saying Agama Amnaya. And he says Maharanavaya. I'm skipping through because explaining this will take a lot more time as well. Vedic knowledge is the source of liberation for a human being. If there was no Vedic knowledge, human beings cannot be liberated. And he says, Maharanavaya, you are the ocean in which all the rivers of knowledge merge. Basically, Krishna says, Vedaischa Sarvair Ahameva Vedya. That the purpose of Vedic knowledge, or for that matter, purpose of any knowledge, is to understand Krishna. And to be able to express the glories of Krishna through that range of or that line of knowledge. Idam hi pumsam shrutavas tapasyava svistasya bhuktasya buddhidattayo avichyuto arhuto kavibhir nirupito yaduttama shloka gunanu varnana. That all the learned men, all the learned persons have come to this conclusion that all lines of knowledge are meant for glorification of Krishna. So Maharnava, that if one follows a path of knowledge properly, one should come to the conclusion that Krishna is the Supreme. If they follow it properly. And to follow that, they need a river flows to the ocean because of its banks. If there are no banks to a river, a river cannot flow to the ocean. The land on both sides gives direction. Therefore, they're called banks. So every field of knowledge is a river but needs those banks. Those banks are the proper methods. We call them Yama and Niyama, rules and regulations. Only when there are rules and regulations will the river flow. If there were no banks, the water will be scattered. So the rules and regulations is that it should not be speculative knowledge. It has to be descending knowledge. That descending knowledge allows one to come to the conclusion that Krishna is the source of everything. That's the Maha Arnavaya, the great ocean. One of the things about ocean, Krishna says, I am in gravity as deep as the ocean, in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. And we discussed during that time that there are some characteristics for the ocean. One is that the ocean is very deep. So deep that no one can fathom it. And so deep that not only deep but also so expansive that no one can cross over. Unless you have the right ship. And even that can capsize. But you can't cross the ocean. You cannot understand the depth. And next is, within that depth, it holds many secrets. It holds many treasures. It gives life to many living entities. And second, it is the ocean that holds water for all the humans and other living beings on land. Right? Don't we sing every morning? Samsara davanala niradoka pranaya karunya ghanagana praptasya kalyana guna arnavasya. It's because of the ocean that the living beings on land can survive. And that oceans, they stay for millions and millions of years. So this sarva agam namnaya maharnavaya is that the Vedic knowledge is preserved for millions and millions and millions of years simply because of a parampara system. As soon as parampara system is broken, knowledge is lost. The ocean becomes inaccessible. Nothing can be taken from the ocean. So it preserves. In the book Light of the Bhagavata, Prabhupada writes how Krishna has arranged water supply for the planet in two ways. He says, one, as all the glaciers on the poles, North Pole and South Pole, huge, vast amounts of water are stored in the form of ice. And the supply, the needed supply on a day-to-day basis, is stored in the oceans. And it is stored as salt water, because salt water stays longer. It does not decay. So it's a salt water. Oceans and seas are salty. Because that water can stay for a long, long, long time and give life to many living beings. This is the way Krishna has arranged water supply for the entire planet, all living beings. And therefore when rains come, it's all water from the ocean. By the sun, he evaporates the water without the salt and gives us fresh water supply as whenever you need it. So knowing an ocean is very difficult. You can get a sense of it by standing at the shore, because wherever you drink the water, it is salty. So you get a sense of what the ocean feels like, but you cannot understand the ocean fully. That means even after studying the Vedic literature thoroughly, one cannot know Krishna in full unless Krishna reveals himself. And then Namo Apavargaya Parayanaya. Apavarga means that which is beyond birth and death. We've heard this from Prabhupada's book called Dharma. You've read that book, Dharma, The Way of Transcendence. It's Prabhupada's commentaries on the second chapter of first canto. It's one of the most fascinating books I've read. Very, very beautiful. Prabhupada explains Shrinvatam, Svakatha, Krishna from there on. Every verse, there's a lecture that is, and it's a fascinating little tiny book, but super, super book. In that book, Prabhupada explains Apavarga. Because in that set of verses, Apavarga shows up in the second chapter of first canto. So, Pavarga in Sanskrit means these five alphabets. Pa, pa, ba, bha, ma. They're called Pavargas. There is like that in Sanskrit language, you have the Kavargas. Ka, kha, ga, gha, ana. And then there's the ta varga, ta, ta, da, dha, na, like that. So this pa varga, these five alphabets, they mean something. Pa means parishram, working very hard in this world. And pa means pena, that by one is working so hard that he's frothing in the mouth. Means there's so much labor put in just to be able to survive in this world. And by so much labor, one gets something, which is mostly money. So he has bandhana. He is very attached to his money and his possessions that come from his money. And because he is very attached, there is bhaya, fear, that it will be taken away or he will lose it. But ultimately, everything is snatched away by mrityu. And because he's dying, he has to take birth again because of that attachment. So pavarga means this repeated cycle of birth and death. And apavarga means to go beyond it, beyond birth and death. So Krishna is apavargaya. He is of that nature. He is in that realm and he himself is beyond birth and death. And finally, parayanaya. Para Ayanaya. Ayanaya means the one who can give. Ayanaya is all the transcendentalists who are moving towards the ultimate goal. And para Ayanaya is being the person who can give shelter to those persons. We hear Krishna also being called Satvatampati. The husband or the pati, the maintainer of all the devotees. So parayanaya also means that. Gopi parayanaya, gopi paranadhana, like that. We hear those words. That means he's the shelter of those persons who are looking for ultimate liberation or looking for him. Or transcendentalists who want to go beyond birth and death. Only he is the shelter. No one else can be that shelter. Everyone else can give some benediction. But their benediction is only material. Only Krishna can give liberation. Therefore he is called Mukunda because he gives mukti. Those are the words by which is explained, I guess, glorifying Krishna. Any comments, questions before I leave? Hare Krishna.
It's working.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Thank you for class. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentioning that thing, what is it written, that one should worship Krishna for liberation?
Yes.
So I was thinking Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Actually, however, one should worship Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for the sake of getting liberation.
For the sake. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, they mentioned that, you know,
Bhukti Krishna, Bhukti
Shakali Ashanta. So, can you give more?
So, when Prabhupada writes here that Krishna should be worshipped for getting liberation, it does not mean the liberation type of the mukti, the way the jnanis are looking for. What it means is, instead of approaching Krishna for material benefits, one should approach Krishna for transcendence. Transcendence means beyond birth and death. That's why one should come to Krishna. That's what it means. So it's not a contradiction. Now, when one comes to Krishna for liberation, then the question will be what kind of liberation? And how to get that liberation? So one can try to get it by speculative knowledge, or one can get it by devotional service. And the highest form of devotional service is, then we say, like he says, Bilva Mangal Thakur says that Mukti is standing at my door with hands, I don't care for her. But that means he is already beyond birth and death. So here when he says one should worship Krishna for liberation, it means not for material blessings. The previous, even the karmi who wants everything for his enjoyment can get it from Krishna. Krishna can supply what he wants. It's not difficult. Actually, one should worship Krishna for something called liberation. That's what it is.
So, nice class, Prabhu. Thank you very much. My question is, like, how do we come to that realization? Like, this sloka will be applying in day-to-day life. Like, Namo Namaste Akhila Karanaya. The first thing we comes, like something like in our life, ups and downs comes. We don't say that, oh, he's the source of everything. So how do we apply in our day-to-day life this sloka in Krishna consciousness?
So when we say Krishna is the source of everything, it may or may not be that Krishna is particularly causing that event. Because that event is maybe moved by the modes of nature. But we say you're the cause of everything because Krishna caused the most of nature. In that sense. We can only appreciate to the degree of realization that we have. So we cannot artificially appreciate something. When someone is going through some difficulty or someone gives us the advice, Prabhu, Krishna is the cause of everything, we become angry. What is this nonsense? Tell me. It depends on our realization. And realization comes from two things, hearing and applying. So we may be hearing it, but even in the small things of life, if we start applying it, then in the big things we understand, oh, that's how it works. So application is necessary. We have to, you know, the devotees, all of us have a habit of saying Krishna's mercy. We meet the spiritual master and we say, all your mercy, all your mercy. It may be a mechanical way of saying it without realizing what it is. But it's important to say, because that practice will one day be Krishna's mercy. Like we're chanting, right? But it's practice for perfection. So hearing is necessary. We hear this every day. And practice it in the small things of life. When we have small successes, then big successes are possible. So little things, you know, something happens, we say, Krishna, it's all your mercy upon me. Okay, that's nice. When the big things come, then we may forget it. But by practice, even when the big things come, Krishna, it is your mercy upon me somehow. I can't see how it is, but it's your mercy on me. So practice. Abhyasa yoga yuktena.
Thank you.
Chetasa nanyaga.
Hare Krishna. You talk about the conclusion of Vedas, that if we, the knowledge of all Vedas should culminate in the knowledge of Krishna. But I never read the Vedas properly, but from the whatever examples Prabhupada is giving in Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, it seems that Krishna is given very indirectly over there, not in a direct way. So how can we understand Krishna in a very indirect way? Because when the queens of Dwarka, they were glorifying Krishna, at that time it says that the glorification was more sweeter than the Vedas because it was directly related to Krishna. But the Vedas is not directly related to Krishna, so how can we understand Krishna in that sense?
The Vedas and Upanishads, they're meant for every human being. And every human being, Krishna has the ultimate purpose that every human being be oriented towards Him. So one may be Bahirmukha, looking totally opposite of Krishna. So for such persons, different elements of knowledge orient them to different degrees towards Krishna. Therefore, the Upanishads have indirect references to Krishna. But the same Upanishads also have direct references to Krishna. Prabhupada quotes from Gopala Thapani Upanishad, for example, or Chandogya Upanishad. So Vedas, it's not like all of the Vedas, if you've read the 87th chapter of 10th canto, all the Vedas personified are discussing among themselves. They cover the entire gamut of knowledge. And in all of it, it is to orient our consciousness to different degrees towards Krishna. Some are very direct, some are indirect, etc. But they're all meant for ये यथा माम प्रपद्यन्ते तांस तथैव भजाम्यहं मम वर्तमा अनुवर्तन्ते मनुष्य पार्थ सर्वसः. All human beings are looking for me. And whatever knowledge they take, that knowledge will direct them to whatever degree of their consciousness plus that knowledge in the direction of Krishna.
And I have appreciation of one point and question in that you say that let's say Queens of Dwarka, I'm reading this chapter, that's why I'm raising this point. There was a question raised in the last verse that does this Queens of Dwarka know Krishna well, because Krishna is very attached to this queens. Does they know well? And the point you raise that no, the Krishna is allowing them to bewilder that he is in control of them. But actually, the person playing in the ocean cannot understand the depth of the ocean. So that was a point. So my question is that who then can really know Krishna? Is the Vrajvasis then know Krishna? Is Krishna himself know himself? Who is to know the Krishna?
Even Krishna is fascinated by his own reflection that he sees. You know that pastime in Krishna book? Krishna is walking and the floors are so shining. He looks at his own reflection and for a moment thinks, who's this? He's enamored by his own beauty. So does anyone know Krishna? How can one know? Lord Ananta, who's such an intimate devotee, has been non-stop glorifying Krishna since time immemorial, but he can't stop. Ananta doesn't fit our this is too complex. What does that mean? Non-stop glorification. Non-stop glorification. Non-stop glorification. And cannot stop.
knowing completely Krishna, how can we even think of getting ourselves successful and going back to home, back to God in this life?
So the way I see it is that each of us is like a pot, and Krishna is like the Niagara Falls. When the pot is full, pot is full. It doesn't have to, it doesn't have the capacity for the entire Niagara Falls fitting, but the pot is full. You have full realization. According to your capacity and rasa with Krishna, you have full realization. But full realization does not mean you know Krishna in full. You have full realization of your relationship, but that's about it. This is this pot, this is this pot, it's full. But then there is Krishna. How Krishna is interacting with all his devotees across all the living entities, across all creation, spiritual world, material world, with every one of them in a very intimate way. Right? The two things that we see in Rasalila, all the gopis are thinking, he's only with me. And the Rasalila is organized in such a circular fashion that every gopi thinks, I'm in the center of the Rasalila. And Krishna sits in the forest with his friends having lunch. They all think Krishna is looking at me. And everyone is sitting around us. Krishna is looking at me. He's looking at all the, of course, the what's his name? Dinabandhu Prabhu says it in a very, I guess, funny way, but wonderful way. He says, Krishna is sitting there. Around him, eight boys were sitting. So that's one bite. And then 8 became 16 and 64 and 1 kilobyte, 1 megabyte and all like that. He says, all 1 terabyte of children all sitting in the forest eating together. And every one of them, they see that Krishna is facing them like face to face. Simultaneously, Krishna is appearing as some avatar somewhere. Krishna is in my home and he's doing different things with them. Somewhere playing chess. Oh, you missed Bhaktimarg Maharaj's dramatic reading of that chapter. He was here. He was reading the verse lines of Krishna book and half the line and he would act it out. You have to guess what it is. It was just really nice. Anyway, the whole chapter. So Narada Muni goes and he sees Krishna in different palaces doing different things. Somewhere is playing chess, somewhere is just waking up. How can he play chess and wake up in the next palace? It's morning there and, you know, afternoon here. It's so, wow, fascinating. Adbhuta Karanaya. Jitendra Prabhu, final comment and then we'll go.
I like the way Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that. He says the progression of clarity of a subject doesn't depend on the subject, it depends on the person. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur said he wrote this book with this like real long 62-page introduction and then a big conclusion. And he said, I wrote this for the ancient people and for the modern people, so there won't be any discord in understanding. Mm. But in order to progress, it depends on the person, you know, where he's situated, like you're saying. So I like the way he explains everything.
Thank you for that. That's really nice.
It's in the conclusion. Thank you.
Talking of conclusion, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Thank you.